Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
Well, and the thing is I told him, if you keep listening to the podcast and you haven't read all of the books, you're going to end up getting spoiled. Oh, hello there. And welcome to another edition of The Fourth Age. I, of course, am Andrew Gellis, and with us this week is Virginia.
Hi, Andrew. That's not fair, making me laugh. Right off the bat, glad to be here as always, and with us this episode, we also have Mark.
Hey, guys. Glad to be back. It's been a while, but I've finally managed to tell my life, shove it, I need to podcast. So, and with us again, I think she's been a lot more frequently on than I have, we have Carrie.
Hey, everybody. I'm excited to be here tonight because we have some interesting stuff to talk about with in regards to Tam.
Yes, we're going to all go to the tavern and have a little ale or a few mugs of ale with Tam all four on this episode. We're going to see if we can get a table at the Happy Throng.
Tam is, if you actually read the book, I believe he is the fourth character you meet. Or fifth that's named, but fourth that actually interacts with the readers. And his steadfast, quiet, always the rock that anyone in the world can use to lean on, the moral compass with which to guide you, he is that man, and he is probably the most interesting because of it. Also, there's the fact that he has probably about five novels worth of backstory that haven't been written. Just... by the little hints that we've been given.
That's actually
true.
That makes
it worth talking about right there.
Yeah, that's actually true. And it reminds me of the two reasons why this topic came about. One was that, I should say the first was, that in a conversation with Min, where he is talking about how he has the memories of Lucerne, but he's still himself, and even though he has a lot of those qualities and so forth and so on, there's one big difference between him and the Lucerne that he was in the past. And he reveals to Min that that was, he thinks, because this time I was raised better. And so we speculated on exactly what was involved in that. You know, what did Tam do that made him able to transcend the darkness that was basically consuming him and emerge as the good dragon, if you will? What we variously called Ven Rand and Ascended Rand and whatever else. Now a good, really, really deeply good person. He always was, but he was really going over the edge.
Yeah, he had a little darkness, a little dark side going on there for a while.
Yeah, he definitely had the Dr. Horrible darkness going on there.
Not only that, but it was Tam that brought him back from all that, you know? Or what occurred in their meeting to get him thinking, what the heck am I doing?
I don't know if it was really the meeting that pushed him over the edge with Tam. We should probably go back.
I thought it was the fact that he went and tried to kill him. It kind of just went like, oh, what am I doing? I mean, there was a lot more to it because he was getting to that point. He got pushed to that point.
Yeah, I'm sure that was instrumental in changing his heart, but he didn't really change right after that. He basically scurried off and went to go destroy Abadar right after that, I believe.
Yeah, well, he went to drag him out, and he went to there first, and then he went to drag him out, and...
Yeah, he came to the revelation that, what was it? Was it the, I think it was the key thing that he thought of it. The reason that he came back over and over again, because he was pondering why the wheel does this over and over again. And I think he came to the conclusion that this gives him a second chance to be a better person, to do things right. Yeah, that was it. Thank you.
That's what it is.
Yeah, thank you. So that, I think that probably had almost as much to do with it as his abortive attempt to kill. I don't know that he really would have killed Tam. I don't think he ever could have made himself go that far.
No, I don't think he would have killed him. But wasn't it the love? Like, if it wasn't for Tam, I mean, it's not that he doesn't love his friends and his women and all that, but I just kind of thought that maybe that's just how I read it. I just took it that.
I should have grabbed The Gathering Storm and gone through.
I should have, too. We should have read over all that stuff.
No, I think that Cad Swain had it very right in her attempt when she eventually sent for Tam. Tam is a very crucial character, specifically for Rand. And during our, you know, our prep work for this episode, we had some emails that were going back and forth And, you know, the one thing that came up is how instrumental Tam is in everything. I mean, he had to be called away from the Two Rivers. He had to go to Ilion and rise high in their military. He had to be called back to the Shining Walls. And this is all before Rand is born, so you can't say, oh, he's being pulled by Taveren Twisting.
Mm-hmm.
It occurred to me in my mind earlier today that we don't often mention it, but everything in the Wheel of Time revolves around the pattern and the age lace and everything that it's all descriptive, almost artistic imagery. And it seems like there is a planned design to the entirety of the way the wheel functions. And with that particular thing in mind, then something had Tam in mind as a kind of, maybe not Taveren, but as a key focal point for all of this set of actions and reactions within the series.
Yeah.
So the go-to guy, basically.
Didn't it say once about the pattern that somebody doesn't... It wasn't about Taveren, because I was thinking about that. Trying to remember what it was. Something about... Because Taveren, everything happens around them, and they shape events so that things will happen for a certain reason, right? But for Rand to be born, didn't somebody tell him when he was in the Waste that a lot of the pattern had to kind of have a lot of coincidences happen or happy happenstance for him to become himself, like so that Tam was in the right place at the right time, so that his mother ran away to the Waste, you know, so she became a maiden of the spear, and like so all these things happened. They were just kind of, the pattern just took little people here and there that weren't Taveren, but they had a part to play. Do you know what I mean? Do you remember I can't even remember what book it's from. I have no idea.
Do you suppose Tam was Taveren for a while himself?
I don't know. I was thinking about that because I thought it seems like a lot of things happened for him to, that's when I was thinking about this other, that instead of Tam being Taveren, because I was kind of thinking that, just all the things that have happened with him going to Ilion, and he has a Heronmark blade that there's just so much, so it seems like maybe he could have been Taveren for a little while. But then I was thinking maybe it was just the pattern. If he didn't leave the Two Rivers and fight in the wars that he fought in, he would have never found Rand. All this stuff wouldn't have happened. So it's almost like maybe he wasn't Taveren, but he was still being used by the pattern. He was like a prop, kind of.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and if you also think about it, even if for some reason he had been near Dragon Mountain, been able to find Rand, if he hadn't gone to Ilion, if he hadn't risen up in the Ilion military, the Two Rivers would have been totally boned, you know, when the Trollocs ended up attacking, because Tam was always that kind of secondary general character. Perrin wasn't really stepping up at that point in the books when Perrin was there defending the Two Rivers.
Yeah.
And the Aes Sedai, well, they would have done stuff because they're Shadow Spawn and they need to die. Kind of have that, the person who organized the Two Rivers men and still does is Tamal Thor.
Yeah. And what would have even happened if, say, he went and found Rand, right, because he just happened to be passing by Dragonmount during the war, but he wasn't in the war. We don't know how he got his sword, right? He said that he killed a Blades Master and he wasn't proud of it, or sorry, I can't remember the words exactly. It wasn't something that he wanted to do, but it had to be done, or I think is how it was worded. He wouldn't have had the sword. And then what would happen to Rand years later when the Trollocs attacked? He wouldn't have had the sword to kill
defend himself
with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and then what would happen? Would he have just grabbed something else, or would he be dead?
Yeah.
He'd probably be
look
dead.
At that. Yeah, probably, yeah. Look at that kind of charming little story that I forgot Nyashim, well, he's dedicated, I guess, his, or maybe a soldier even. His name, was it Nalam or whatever, the Dimani who was telling all the tall tales to Andral and the others and Kaelor. And they were talking about the Two Rivers Longbow and so forth and so on, because Andral had made the arm guard for the Two Rivers Man. And Nalam comes up with this little story that his dad trained on the Two Rivers Longbow he was taught by a man in Alien whose life he saved. And I thought, after I read it about the second time, I thought, gosh, isn't that was Tam? But we have turns and turns, and the same thing just keep coming around and around. It's kind of scary when you think about it. He saved him from drowning. That was what it was. And what if that person hadn't been right there to save Tam and Ilian from drowning? The prophecy said that the dragon reborn would be of the old blood and raised by an even more ancient blood, not theirs, the Aiel, not the Aiel. Not that many Two Rivers people ever left the Two Rivers. It was just like just Tam. As far as I ever remember hearing, nobody ever left. So, I mean, they weren't exactly thick on the ground. So if Tam el-Thor had bought it in Ilion by drowning, then what would happen? Would the whole pattern just fall apart? Dragons no longer going to be found? I mean, how many more guys that come down from Minithrin are there going to be running around in the area of Tar Valon when they have the Battle of the Shining Walls? That seems like a pretty thin reed for the pattern to place everything on.
But I think that's why it set really wish I could remember where this was from. I'm pretty sure Rand was in the waste at the time, and he was told that, I just remember at some point he was told that a lot of the things had to be, like the pattern had to shape a lot of things, like for just small, like happy coincidences for him to become, to be born and to become the dragon who he is. Do you guys remember that at all? Or am I just like making it up in my head?
I don't, but that doesn't mean...
Sometimes I do that.
I don't know. How qualified to judge you're making up things in your head, Carrie. Sorry.
If I think about like if I think something sometimes long enough, I wonder, was that really in there, or is that just like my theory and I'm thinking it's real?
I know. We all do that. You know, we get something in our head and it seems so reasonable, and eventually you're just going to think it is that way, and then you go back and read the book or...
I found out where Tam got his Aaron Mark sword. It was actually presented to him by King Matt Stepanos.
What? He said that he killed a blade master. I thought a lot of people... I read a theory that someone said that he got it from... They thought he killed Layman.
I'm not sure who he killed, but it was confirmed apparently at a book signing.
Oh.
I'm just glancing through Encyclopedia Watts because the big white book had nothing on Tam whatsoever. His name doesn't even appear in...
Really?
Under characters, Tam el-Thor, which is actually not his full name. His name is Tamlin, apparently, according to
the... Yeah, I went to... I don't know how I totally missed that, because I went to Encyclopedia Watts.
Yeah, King Matin Stepanos presents Tam el-Thor of the Ilianer Companions with a one-power-crafted Heron-Mark sword.
Well, then, wherever else I was reading that other theory that people thought that he got it from Layman, I guess they're totally wrong, huh?
It doesn't say who he killed. It just says that he got one.
Right,
I mean,
they thought that he took his sword, though. That was part of the thing was that he took the sword.
Yeah, they're... Well, because we know there are only two ways to become a blade master. You know, you either
have
seven blade masters sit in judgment of you and decide unanimously that you are worthy of it, or you kill an existing blade master in fair combat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but... We know that he didn't get Layman's sword because Layman's sword is given to Rand by Abianda.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That was part of it, though. They were saying in this saying that they thought that he had two swords. Like, one was, like, he wasn't using. Like, one was his Blade Master sword that was something that he would use to fight with, and the other one was just for decoration type thing, is what they were saying in the theory.
I don't see how he would have gotten two power-wrought Heron-Mark blades. Because the one that Tam had originally was created by the power, and the one that Rand got from Avienda was also made with the power. It was not just one of the newer ones that eventually will need sharpening and dull and all that fun stuff.
Rand was on one about how power rod blades are so rare, and that blade could tell a story of 3,000 years or more. They're not thick on the ground to be given somebody.
I think that theory you're reading, Carrie, is probably, we could almost consider it debunked. I don't know whose it is, and I apologize in advance.
It was on, I think it was the Watt Wiki or something.
People can write anything, but it's not.
Yeah.
Robert Jordan put it in an interview.
But I was on Encyclopedia Watt, and I don't know how I totally missed that.
I just glanced at that, because as I said, while you guys were talking earlier, I was quickly trying to find another thing to talk about by glancing through the Great White Book, and Tam isn't even mentioned. I was like...
Yeah, well, it doesn't have much in the Great Big White Book, except for, like, the lands and the peoples.
It's got
creatures.
A lot of those, the Age of Legend and the earlier
yeah.
stuff, but I mean, you also have to remember, the Great White Book came out not long after A Crown of Swords. So Path
yeah.
of Daggers, Knife of Dreams, Crossroads, all the other new books, which is where a lot of our good stuff is being discussed from, wasn't even around for it to be included at the time. I mean, we're still waiting for Harriet to confirm Great White Book version 2. I
yeah.
think she still hasn't confirmed or denied that one yet, last I remember, but granted, that's like 2 years ago.
Well, it's sort of been confirmed. I know a number of the Tower Guard this year at the book signings in their private questions would ask things. And I know, at least from the Cincinnati signing, there was one that said, well, that's going to be something that's in the encyclopedia, which was essentially the idea of the Big White Book too. But it was something
yeah,
that is that isn't going to happen until A Memory of Light is out and completed.
Man,
well, I seem to remember us trying to pry that answer out of Maria and Alan when we did the interview with them, and they sort of kept on trying to sidestep it, so...
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, really.
Definitely. I mean, heck, I'll help write the darn thing.
I think they got a line of people volunteering for those little positions, you know. Probably stretches
now,
around the
whole house. Get some sort of preferential treatment considering how much we talk about the series.
You would think. It doesn't seem to work that way, though, does it?
No, but we can still hope.
Yeah.
Can we?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Why not? Inevitably, I think talking about Chandler is going to probably lead to talking a little bit about Taviren and the nature of Taviren. That whole concept of things had to happen in order for Rand Balfour to be born on Dragonmount, let alone anything else. After thinking that possibly that Cham was the man from Ilion whose life was saved, and I just thought, well, there wasn't anybody else there to step in for him, or there probably weren't any other Manetherin-descended Two Rivers men lying around. It's like, so if something had gone wrong and Cham had been killed, would that, the Shadow just get to win because there'd be no Rand? How is it going to fulfill those prophecies that he's going to be raised by the ancient blood and et cetera, and born on the slopes of Dragonmount if there isn't somebody there to find a maiden of the spear giving birth? Hello, how rare is that? That's unheard of. The whole thing seems like it's a pretty frail framework to base the entire fate of the world, the universe,
yeah.
all the fish, everything else.
My thought is that the pattern is going to find a way. And I don't think they would have just nixed the dragon quite that early. Or Rand wouldn't have been the dragon, and it would have been, there would have been something else that drew another woman to Dragonmount to give birth. And it just, this time it happened to be just the right circumstances. And, you know, even if Rand had been born, but Tam, for some reason, weren't able to be there, then you look for the next person of old blood to be able to bring him up. So we know for a fact that while there aren't necessarily, well, there isn't anyone else from the Two Rivers there, Manethrin was a relatively large country in its day, and any of the other nations could have produced someone who theoretically has enough of the old blood in them that it would have made some amount of sense. And barring that, we also know that Lon was there, and Malkier isn't necessarily as old as Manethrin, but it's still not a young nation either as far as nations go. So, I mean, I get the feeling that the pattern wouldn't quite just give up that easily.
Well, I would hope not, but it's kind of, I mean, it's just the whole concept of it just seems so haphazard, you know?
Remember Herod Selvo, he was talking about how things work via order and chaos, or I could just be trying to mix chaos theory into this, which would be probably crazy as it is, but I could have sworn there was something in Herod Selvo's ramblings before he was
Gollum'd.
Killed. Thank you, he is Gollum'd. And then either that or else something else that Min found while going through the rest of it, that order and chaos and everything else, look at how the Wheel of Time itself is driven by and resisted by the true source, which works against each other while pushing and working together to turn the wheel of time. All this complicated stuff that really shouldn't happen but does happen, and it almost does make sense that everything has to happen exactly in this really random, chaotic way for it to happen. But with all the crazy stuff that seems to be going on in the world anyway, and with the pattern in general, it actually does kind of fit. Am I making sense, or am I just rambling out the back of my behind here?
No, yeah, and it's even kind of just like the saying, you know, everything happens for a reason, except taken to a little bit of a different level.
Yeah, really.
Where every little thing is actually, it's when it comes to certain characters, certain people in the pattern, they might not be Taviran, but it's like certain things that happen to them in their lifetime are happening because the pattern needs it to happen, or...
Well, look at Bale Dolman. I mean, he's been pulled every which way but the way he wants to go half the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we did a whole episode on him. I mean, he's just appeared over and over and over in the series. What did you call him, Andrew? A glue character?
Yeah, glue character.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it makes sense all this stuff is going to happen in a specific way because, well, everything else seems to be. So why can't all the conditions that lead up to Shail, who I believe we've managed to determine is Tigraine, so Elaine's aunt or whatever ends up going and becoming a maiden and then comes back to Dragon Mount and has birth. I mean, how is it any different from anything else that we've had to randomly discuss on the theory? Not to try and be argumentative or anything.
That is true.
So what do you think it was? Obviously, Tam was a good father. I mean, he's like a quintessential father figure. But what things do you think he really did that instilled such a sense of goodness and right in Rand that he would say such a thing, that this time he was raised better and that's why he was able to overcome the darkness? I mean, he said that the Dark One almost had him, and he said that if he had been as he was when he was Luthien, he probably would have lost that battle, but this time he was raised better. So, I mean, gee, that's a scary thing too when you think about it, how close he came and how close basically the whole world came to losing, and it all is based on the character and personality of one guy. And who adopted a kid and raised him as his own? Wow.
Well, yeah. I can attest a little bit to that because I wasn't adopted, but I was raised on a farm with all the values that go with the hardworking, quintessential farm person. I mean, when things go wrong, you suck it up, you have to chin up, and you keep on going. Raised out in the, for lack of a better term, middle of BF nowhere on a farm, you just end up doing what you got to do. And I was raised the same sort of way: hard work, determination, attention to detail, and get everything done. Granted, I had a full family, not just a father, but I can see where it comes from in all those morals and values, because at least before his psycho "I'm going to kill my own father" came into play, I found myself relating a lot to Rand, because I was raised the same way, out in the middle of nowhere with friends, but still that same general farm boy attitude. I don't know how better else to explain it.
Well, I can see that, and that makes a lot of sense. But then we can bring up plenty of examples just in the books of farmers who did the same thing and still were less. I mean, look at the Coplins and the
Congers.
Congers, yeah. I mean, look at them. They were raised on farms, same, all the way down the line. So there's an innate character issue as well, I think.
Yeah.
But also what else have this? He went and joined the military. You go into the military, you learn, well, theoretically, right from wrong, how to make good decisions, how to keep your head under pressure, and he instilled those values as well into his son.
Yeah. Well, but then again, I can look at plenty of examples throughout history and modern times and books and anything else where there are plenty of soldiers who don't exemplify the best character in the world either. So, yeah, but again, I go back, there was something innate in Tam, a goodness to him that allowed him to fulfill the role that he needed to fulfill.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with Tam's personality and his own person on how he would raise his son. And then it's probably a combination of Rand's parents, Tam, and I know that Carrie wasn't, she died when he was young, so but still, when you're a child, even when you're a baby, a lot of the things that you learn and your sensories, even if you don't actually physically remember them, a lot of who you are comes from that when you're a young child. And I think that it's the family that he had, Tam being the biggest part of it, but also maybe the farm, the lifestyle that he lived, the whole, his friends and everybody, the closeness that he had. I think it was just his upbringing. But Tam, obviously, with the biggest impact on that.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing to consider, too, is that, yes, Tam has innate good qualities. He is a better than just decent human being. But at the same time, if you go to the extended prologue to Eye of the World, the one that was when they split it into two separate novels for easier reading for children, and yes, I did waggle my fingers in quotation marks as I said that, Tam is the only person who doesn't shy in the Two Rivers at telling stories about the dragon and Luster and Telamon. And, you know, we know Tam is a at least semi-read individual. He might not be versed as well as someone with an extremely expensive education, but he has read more than your average backwater farmer. So yeah. You get the impression that he's read at least the core. You can take a Bible to a huge population and say, have you read anything? And a lot of people will go, well, yeah, I read a chunk out of Revelations. And it's the same sort of concept. I get that idea that when he picked up the baby on Dragon Mount, he had to have at least had an inkling of who and what was going on. So much so that, I might be imagining this, but I could have sworn there was at least one partial conversation where Tam talks about the fact of hoping that by taking him back to the Two Rivers that the world would just kind of pass them all by, and it being one of those things where if you know, hey, I've just picked up somebody who's possibly going to be the person on whom the shoulders rests the fate of the world, maybe I should teach them some good values, because having him be a total jerk would be a bad thing for the world.
Yeah, you gotta think.
That yeah, that would not be
something
good.
Like that ran through his head. Like, I mean, you're not gonna see a baby on the slopes of Dragon Mount and not be instantly thinking in your head prophecies, baby. Oh, dog poop.
I got the dragon reborn. What am I gonna do with him? And yeah, he raised this kid without a wife too. You know, she died not that long after, so it's like he really had a tough road to hoe.
Harry died 5 years later. Harry died when Rand was five.
Got him through the infancy part, but the rest of it.
Yep.
Pretty scary.
And it makes you wonder if maybe Tam never remarried, not only because he wasn't interested in remarrying, but maybe he didn't want somebody. He would have to trust somebody. I don't know if he would be able to trust somebody that much if he had any ideas like that in his head to help him raise Rand, you know?
Well, not only that, I think there was probably a danger factor, too. I mean, he didn't know, nobody in that time really knew all that much about men at the channel, other than that they were to be feared and that they'd go mad and kill everybody around him like Luthien did. And if he thinks, you know, I mean, if he's read the prophecies of the dragon, which I'm sure he probably had, and had a good inkling that this kid might not only be the dragon reborn, but a channeler, a reincarnated channeler who killed everybody around him, maybe he didn't want to expose anybody else to that potential danger. Maybe that's why he lived way out in the Westwood.
Yeah.
Instead of nearer to town. I don't know. I'm fishing here, but I never thought about this until just this minute. But, you know, that makes a lot of sense. If he did know and did have an idea.
Maybe, yeah.
Anybody's got to be a little leery about bringing home the potential breaker of the world. In their mythology, the Dragon Reborn is not just a savior. He's the potential destroyer. I mean, he might as well be Shiva the Destroyer as far as they're concerned.
And
maybe that's why he never remarried.
Uh-huh. That's true.
I don't know, but he certainly was a remarkable person.
Well, in this particular lull, I'd like to take a moment and welcome Spencer to the call.
Yay. Hey, Spencer.
Wait, what? Who's here? What now?
I haven't missed much, don't worry.
Yeah, we're all done.
Yeah, I figured if I waited long enough, you'd be done before I showed up. So it's good.
Although you missed a wonderful entrance.
As long as it got properly recorded, I'm good.
Yeah. It did.
So
I actually have an idea that I was thinking about, but I didn't want to say anything because we started talking about other stuff, about the sword.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know that it was given to him by Matin Stepanios. Because I was thinking about that. Matin Stepanios was abducted during the White Cloak War, and Tam was in the White Cloak War, so maybe Tam rescued him, and that's why he got was given a sword by him.
Man, that means he's been abducted twice.
Yeah, I know.
How lousy a king is he?
What a schlemiel this guy is, huh?
Maybe because it happened so long ago, because it was like, you know, maybe he started slacking on his security if he beefed it up. But, yeah, it doesn't show very much promise for him, does it?
You have to just imagine when the Aes Sedai threw the sack over his head that he was like, oh, no, not again.
Not again.
Was it even just the second time? There might have been more. I don't know.
Yeah, that we don't know about.
Or,
but you have to think, anyone who could get themselves abducted by less than 13 or 15 Aes Sedai, like, you know, they did Taran. Really? Really? I don't know.
I'd like to just point out that I'm sorry to blow another theory there, Carrie.
He was
ransomed by Pedron Neal.
Yeah.
He was ransomed back. He didn't escape. He wasn't rescued. He was ransomed.
I thought...
So the White Cloaks paid him a crap ton of money, and Neal let him go.
But it says they held him for ransom. They would have routed the Illinois army if not for the valor of the Illinois companions. So if it wasn't for the companions, they wouldn't have won the war. The only reason they captured Matin Stepanios was because they were doing crappy, wasn't it? And then the companions kind of won the war, and I don't know, maybe he didn't rescue him, but maybe it has to have some link to it. Why would he just give Tam a hair-marked blade, a power walk, brought one?
He had such pretty eyes, you know?
Unless Stepanios was one of the five blade masters who sat in judgment on him, because, you know, there's the two ways. One is you get unanimously voted, and one, you kill a blade master.
But do we know that Stepanios was a blade master?
He said he killed someone that was a blade master, but we don't know that Stepanios was.
Yeah, but I don't know that Stepanios was a blade master. I mean, and it seems to me that anybody who's a blade master wouldn't be getting abducted by everybody who walks down the street.
You would think so. Or not.
I mean, it leads me to think that maybe, here's a theory for you, maybe it's kind of like how Rand initially gets his blade master rank, as it were, because he killed another blade master, but there were no witnesses. So I mean, he admitted that in, I believe it was, the most recent book. He actually admitted that to somebody. I think it was me, but I'm not sure. I can't remember. Because he killed Turok way back in The Great Hunt, but no one managed to witness it because all of his Dacoval were lying face down on the floor just waiting for the outcome, waiting for the High Lord to say, okay, help me, or okay, do this. I mean, they were very good Dacoval. They did what they were supposed to.
All of Rand's companions were busy trying to stay alive, too. Ingtar and all those guys, you know.
But no one witnessed it, unlike when Galad fought his battle against Valda.
Yeah, that was pretty public.
Yeah.
That was very public. So he was anointed a blade master that way.
I wish when Robert Jordan answered the question at the signing about how he got his sword, that he went into a little bit more detail.
There's an interesting distinction. Tam's page on Encyclopedia Watt has two separate statements. He went to Ilion and became a blade master and was presented a Heron-marked blade by Matin Stepanios. Those do not necessarily have to be concurrent. Tam could have achieved the rank of blade master by killing another blade master, therefore fulfilling his comment about, I paid entirely too much for it, but not had an actual Heron mark blade that could be presented to him until Matin somehow found a reason to present him with, hey, you've done a really good job, here, have this priceless ancient artifact.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, of course, the way that's laid out, I could understand it if it was that, but I could also understand if, because of the way they laid it out, if that was just whomever put together this page, just making sure that you knew this piece of information came from here, this other piece of information came from this, so that you knew where they came from. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was the other way either, if it was what you just said. The site that I'm looking at is bit.ly/wattinterviews, and I'm in the Tam and Carrie section, and I'm looking through here, and I can't even find anything about him being a blade master. I've looked blade, I've looked master, and I've looked Matin and Stepanios, and I can't find any of them in this section. which is usually pretty good about having all the possible references that have been made from either Brandon Sanderson or Team Jordan or Robert Jordan himself. So, I don't know, I'm hoping that more than one set of eyes might be better at trying to find out where this came from. Apparently, though, the rank of second captain is in the Illionaire Companions, and it's held by one person at a time, and it's the second in command of the Illionaire Companions, which is...
Oh, big stuff.
It's just big stuff.
Aren't they used sometimes as the king of Illion's personal guard, but then they're also part of his army, too?
Yeah, they're part of the army. I think they're just his personal detachment, like the king's guard or whatever. Like, you know, they have the Coldstream Guard or whatever, and... You know, just as an aside, does it seem to you like an awful lot of people get abducted in this world?
An awful lot of people get abducted by the White Tower. For heaven's sake. Not only Stephanos and the idiocy that they attempted with the friggin' Dragon Reborn, locking him in a crate and beating him daily, I mean, friggin' torturing the guy... who is the most powerful channeler in existence. Not a wise idea.
I know. Not a guy you really want to get on the bad side of, you know?
Especially, I don't know...
He could break the world. Oh, let's beat him and make him really angry.
And why don't you think that there might be people coming to get him? Why does it not cross your mind that people will be coming to get him from you? I'm sorry, you
That's
don't get to beat him.
Though.
We're going to take him back.
That was Masana's plan, though, wasn't it? Masana?
I don't know if it was Masana's plan. It wouldn't surprise me, because I think Elida was the, go and kidnap him, but I'm pretty sure it probably came from Galena first and foremost.
Yeah.
Especially a lot of the crap that happened in transit, the locking him in a box and beating him nightly, torturing him. That one seems like it came from Galena, because it would not have surprised me if that was in an effort to... kind of make him hate the White Tower even more, just to add to the chaos of the world.
You could actually put Elaine's kidnapping down to Aes Sedai too, even though they were Black Aja. You couldn't say the White Tower did it, but they were Aes Sedai.
Well,
even though Elaine
kind of her own fault, too.
Well, yeah, you think?
It's like, come on, are you serious?
I know Elaine's been running around for about, eight books now, saying, with a big sign around her neck saying, beat me, kill me, abduct me, hey!
Yeah.
Here I am.
Nothing
target.
Can happen to me until my babies are born.
If I hear that one more time,
dear, give me the knife, please.
I can't understand why Brigida hasn't beaten her senseless by now. I honestly don't understand that.
Because
so
Brigida would be able to feel it.
She'd feel it. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not just the kind of warder bond that we generally see between warders. They actually have a tendency to exhibit the same symptoms.
Yes, they do.
It'd be tough to give her a good strapping then, I guess. So.
Well, but you also can't claim, you need to be careful so that nothing happens to the babies. Despite what the viewing says, you can't be sure, and that doesn't mean nothing's going to happen to you and nothing's going to jeopardize the babies at all. Come here so I can hit you. That's kind of saying one thing and doing another.
Oh, I have no problem with that logic. This is for your own goody lane. This is going to hurt me more than it will hurt you.
Random tangent question for something that was brought up just a couple minutes ago. Was it Masana then who ended up taking over as the chosen in charge of the Black Aja? Or was there someone sort of in the interim? Because, I mean, after Ishamael ended up fighting the Balefire in, I'm pretty sure it was Ishamael in Book 3 that ended up dying. After he bit the Balefire, nothing's really heard about the Black Aja leadership for a number of books, and I was wondering if this Masana just sort of took over arbitrarily, or...
Yeah, and then she was getting, or what's his name? What's his name was coming to see her and giving her... Oh my
Shut
god, I'm totally having a... Yes! Here, my brain is not working. And wasn't he telling her what to do at some point?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so... But she, I guess, was still the one in the White Tower that would be trying to get it done with her little minions.
Interesting point that's only tangentially connected to this particular conversation. Ishii died on a blade. Baelal died by Balefire.
Oh, Ishii was, oh right, because Ishii came
because
back.
Because Ishii couldn't be Moradin if he had died by Balefire.
Anyway, couple of interesting things. First off, I finally found out where in this thing it talks about where Tam got the sword from a Lord of Chaos Victor in Atlanta in October of 1994. And here's everything that is written. Tam's sword, : given to him by the King of Ilion.
Oh, God.
And although I think this can give us kind of an idea about a little bit more about Tam, again, October of 1994, but this was in Chicago, the question was Tam involved in the White Cloak or Ilion War mentioned by Pedro Niall from Robert Jordan? That isn't something I've given much consideration to, i.e. its background and not significant. He probably was, since he wasn't in the Ilion army then. Now, I don't know. This was in 94. We're quite a few years past 94. The notes on Tam may or may not have been much more fleshed out since then, but at that point in time, this period of Tam's life was not significant and therefore not as fleshed out in Robert Jordan's mind.
Well, darn that. I think his life was significant back then.
Well, it was because he...
Well, what to tell you about that? That's kind of weird.
Well, since then, though, since he has said that he had been planning on a prequel novel that would have been the Tam Al-Thor story, I kind of have to assume that he would have fleshed out more of Tam's story since then. Again, this was during the Lord of Chaos signing tour,
yeah.
So I'd be very surprised if there hasn't been more written beyond what we already know.
What do you think is going to be his primary focus, for lack of a better term? I mean, I don't want to say his goal, I don't want to say his role, because we all know he's going to be a general. But what is his main focus going to be in Armageddon?
I think he's probably going to be in charge of the Two Rivers fighting men. And women, I guess, if they have women fighting. But in charge of whatever segment of the army the Two Rivers men make up. Because I have this sneaking suspicion that the last battle, no matter where it's fought and how many fronts it's fought on, but that the armies, with the exception of, you know, the Band of the Red Hand, are going to be very segmented by geographical location that the core of the army is made up of. Where are they right now? Perrin and the Two Rivers men are...
They're in the Fields of Mirilor.
Yeah, they're all there. I think the only major group that isn't is the Band of the Red Hand right now. Pretty sure that's the only one not in the middle of nowhere. Which is, you know, helpful because Caemlyn's being attacked, and guess where the Band of the Red Hand is? I think Perrin's probably going to have the final say on where the Two Rivers men actually make their stand. I don't know where that's going to be, though. I mean, there are so many fronts that... Especially with the fact that they can get through the supposedly locked way gates. There are so many fronts that the Trollocs can attack from. I don't know where they would be sent. I don't think it's going to be the Two Rivers. I think the Two Rivers has been played out as a battleground. In the real world, it could be, but in the fantasy setting that these books are set in, it's not going to be. I wouldn't be surprised if they end up in Tarwyn's Gap.
You know how all the people that are just regular Joes, farmers, whatever they may be, they're just having this urge to pack up their stuff and go north to do what they can. I wonder if maybe they're going to merge with the Two Rivers guys and stuff. I don't know. Maybe they can help them out. If there's any fighters, maybe they'll take just the fighters, like anybody that has experience and that kind of stuff.
I kind of got the feeling that a lot of those people were in the group that got picked up by Lon when he went to... what was the border that he crossed over that he couldn't get by?
Was it Arafel?
I think it might have been. I just remember...
Because Kandor they went to in New Spring. It wouldn't have been Saldea.
Even when we first meet the farmer and his friend who are traveling north, you know, I got the feeling, they're going to be joining up with Lon. That's their purpose in this story, is to join up with Lon. And so I got the feeling that we kind of saw them charging to their doom at the end of Towers of Midnight, right into the Tarwyn's Gap.
Charging to their doom. Come on. I don't think
there
the
is.
Last charge, Golden Crane.
Not. Don't even say that. Not.
There's a huge, huge, huge amount of evil creatures in that light. All of whom, well, not all of whom, but a good majority of whom are spilling out of the Tarwyn's Gap as we speak. I say as we speak, even though it's in a written form, so it doesn't quite work. Anyway,
Oh, the farmer going north is Renald Farnoar.
Yes, 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 yes.
I don't know what else
to say about
him.
Well, it looks like this podcast ran a little bit far afield, but nonetheless, we had a good time discussing the various topics, including Tamal Thor. And
in any case, we are going to wrap up this episode on Tam and various other topics. And I want to take this opportunity to thank Andrew, Carrie, Mark, and Spencer all for showing up and doing their part here. Really appreciate it. It's always great to have a whole crew here.
You know how to get a hold of us if you need to. Our Dragon Mount page, email, 1-800 number. I mean, we're out there. You can find us. Heck, find me as a person on Facebook and say, hey, I don't like how you said that, because then I'll get into a nice spirited discussion.
Well, anyway, we always welcome everybody's feedback. We appreciate you as listeners listening to us talk and sometimes ramble about our favorite series, Wheel of Time. We hope that you enjoy it as much as we do. And as Mark just mentioned, there are any number of ways you can get a hold of us. You can find us online. If you Google us, you'll find us on Dragon Mount, Facebook. You can use the 800 number on Dragon Mount. So if you want to make a contribution, give us a call, give us an email. We'll be glad to discuss it. So in the meantime, this is Virginia saying may the light illumine you until we meet again.
Take care, everybody.
Been a pleasure, guys. Take it easy.
Thanks for coming back.
And until next time, may you find water and shade.
And for myself, Andrew Gellis, and everyone here at the Fourth Age, Saravyanin Tomanshima, Taishite.